Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Wiseout. Today, we're talking about Wizard of Oz. We're going to start our mega deep dive. We're going deeper than you probably want to go on Wizard of Oz. This first part to our esoteric occult analysis of this classic tale. We're going to set up for parts 2, 3, maybe 4, I don't know. The notes keep growing as I research it. We're going to set up the larger analysis of the secret esoteric message of what's going on behind Wizard of Oz. It's a movie they filmed back in 1938, 39, and we're still watching it. Why? I think that's tapping into something. It's tapping into a deeper occult energy, and we're going to cover all the occult inspirations behind this story from Aleister Crowley, Liber Oz, the book that he wrote, Helena Blavatsky's Theosophy, how it inspired L. Frank Baum, the creator of this story, to make these characters, Dorothy, Tin Man, the Scarecrow. We're going to break down how L. Frank Baum was inspired through these otherworldly forces or entities even to make this story. We'll talk some of the tragedies behind the making of this film. And even David Lynch will make a cameo before it's all said and done in just part one of this mega deep dive into the esoteric realm of Wizard of Oz. And look, I'm not guaranteeing that this will be the most comprehensive look at Wizard of Oz, because there's a lot of Wizard of Oz nerds out there, all right? You could spend a lifetime researching this subject, I'm finding out. But I will guarantee you that this is top five in terms of esoteric symbolism analysis of Wizard of Oz. And like I always say, I'm no expert, but I do study and research a lot of this occult stuff. But it's arguable you could find someone who's more well-versed and knowledgeable about the occult and the secret language, and they might have better information. Like, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. It's out there. I've watched a ton of stuff on Wizard of Oz now. Lots of YouTube channels and stuff. But I'm going to make this analysis more understandable than most, I would argue, right? That's the flavor I bring to this, right? I'm not an occultist. I don't fully understand all of these occult practices. I've got a ton of books on it. I'm still trying to figure out what the hell this is all about. I'm not saying they're right. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying, all right? Now, multiple sources I had to check out to perform. I mean, I could write a whole book on this. You should see how many notes I got. It's insane. And I could keep going. I just had to call it and say, look, I started this back in November because I was going to release these shows in preparation for the Christmas holiday when Wizard of Oz starts making the rounds on television. And I'm telling you, I could push this to probably next Christmas, to be honest. But we got to move on. I've got so many other subjects I got to study. And I'll discuss some of these sources as they come up, but let me give a quick shout out and my attributions to all these different sources. And these aren't even all of them. These are just the kind of the biggest inspirations for this. First, I read the book. I mean, obviously, I watched the movie, right? And I read the book. And my father, strangely enough, was a big Wizard of Oz fan. I remember him saying that when he was alive. I wish I could talk to him about it. I don't know how far that goes. I just remember he was into it, which, you know, my dad was into Bruce Willis and Clint Eastwood movies, so it was kind of bizarre. So those were the underlying inspirations, and I was always into it as a kid, you know. But I also use these sources. Dark Journalist has a great, like, a three-hour show on this on YouTube. Bledsoe Said So did a great show on this maybe, I don't know, 6 months ago. Vigilant Citizen has a decent article on it. Robert Sullivan, the guy I've had on this show two or three times now, from his book series, Cinema Symbolism. Well, the first book, Cinema Symbolism 1, goes into detail about some of Wizard of Oz. And then there's a variety of sources. There's a good Mystic Secrets of Oz on YouTube by Daniel Gautier. It's on his YouTube channel, I should say. Lots of stuff. Lots of places you can look. I'm trying to consolidate a lot of research for you guys and get it done in like 3 hours if I can. So, as you know, so we're not going into the film today. Today we're going into the inspiration behind the film, the characters, the actors, all that stuff, because you got to understand L. Frank Baum and his devotion to theosophy before we get into it. Which, strangely enough, with all the countless documentaries about the Wizard of Oz and about the creator and about the alleged curse behind the movies, almost without fail, nobody brings up theosophy, which I find very peculiar. Now, should you watch this film? Come on. I don't know who hasn't seen Wizard of Oz, but if you haven't, I'm calling the police, all right? And it's a great movie. 101 gets it done. 101 minutes and it's over. But to be honest, as a kid, when I would watch this movie, it was more fun. As an adult, I lose interest. But the whole movie, you know, L. Frank Baum wrote this as a kid's book, and they published it in the year 1900. And then in 1902, they got a stage play. And then 1939, finally, they released the film that most of us are familiar with this story. And let's get into who's in this film. First off and foremost, Judy Garland plays Dorothy, obviously. The studio was going to use Shirley Temple as Dorothy, but she was busy. Then they asked Deanna Durbin. She was busy. And finally, they landed on Judy Garland, because back then, the studios would sort of own exclusive rights to these actors. And Judy Garland tragically turned out to be one of these tales of Hollywood and the big Hollywood machine just wrecking people's lives. Especially back in the Golden Age days. There's a movie called Babylon out right now. I haven't seen it, but from what I understand, it's, I don't know if it's an homage to the Golden Age of Hollywood or a warning tale. I'm not sure. But she was 15, 16 years old when they filmed Wizard of Oz. And by the time she was in her 40s, she was damn near homeless. She's down and out, owing taxes, suicidal. I mean, what happens here, right? Because this was a huge movie back then, as it is today. And fun fact, L. Frank Baum he had an infant child that they named Dorothy Baum, who died at a few months old. That's where the name Dorothy from Wizard of Oz comes from. It's inspired from his daughter that he lost. Now, Judy Garland, if you go to a 1967 interview she did with McCall's, she said this: "Do you know how difficult it is to be Judy Garland? And for me to live with me, I've had to do it. And what more unkind life can you think of than the one I've lived?" Whoa. What do these celebrities go through? What's causing this level of anguish? Is Hollywood as a system predatory, manipulative, destructive? And if it is, which arguably it is, you hear this story over and over again, what are the dark forces inspiring this? It's not just a few bad actors. A few bad apples, I should say. Well, anyway, after Wizard of Oz, you know, Judy Garland didn't just go away. She was still very, very popular. She would do, in 1954, she did A Star Is Born. Got her a nomination for the Academy Award. She released 8 studio albums. Like, she kept busy, right? But as a child, this is when all her problems started, all right? It started at home. And her mother, whom Judy Garland called the real Wicked Witch of the West in some interviews, her mother coerced her into being a celebrity, into being a star of Hollywood, which you see over and over again. You know, a lot of people, they're like, oh my God, the drag queens are grooming the kids. It ain't them. It's the parents, right? Sometimes it's the parents. They get them involved in Hollywood too young because they want them to be a celebrity, because they want to live through their kids. They put them in these beauty pageants where they got little, I don't know, 8-year-old girls dressing up like grown-ass women. I'm just saying, it's kind of creepy, right? And look, I'm not defending the drag. Like, I think it's weird, right? Like, why the drag queens got to read to the kids? Like, I'm not saying, like, you're crazy for thinking that's a little odd and we should question that, right? But I'm just saying, like, if you want to look at the real evils of what's going on to these kids being groomed, I'm saying I don't think it's the drag queens grooming them. I think it could be a little more systemic than that. And why do the parents do this, right? I mean, I don't know. I don't have kids. I just know that when I look at these beauty pageants, it's creepy as hell. When I look at some of these cheer, whatever the hell, like, it's creepy, man. They put these little tiny girls in these little booty shorts, and they're twerking and shit. It's like, yo, what? You ever see that Cuties movie on Netflix? It's kind of like that, right? Anyway, let me get off my soapbox. Judy Garland called her mom the real Wicked Witch of the West. And her own mother, apparently, and you find mixed sources as to what really started Judy Garland's problems. It seemed like she claimed that her mother put her on diet sleeping pills at the age of 10. And her father was out. He was absent. He was out banging dudes. Out cruising. Isn't that an Al Pacino movie? Cruising for dudes on the strip. But overall, Judy Garland, she was a hot mess. And, you know, again, child actor, golden era of Hollywood, not a good formula, not a good recipe. Not a good time for everyone back then. No, no, no. You know, the kids and the females had a bad shake at it back then. But if you go to Shudder has a show called Cursed Films 2. They have an episode about Wizard of Oz, and they talk about how her own mother tried to abort her, and they think that this led to her feeling not protected from anyone, especially Hollywood. And they talk about the energy pills that Hollywood put her on and all that stuff. Take a listen.
She said, "I always felt unwanted." And she wasn't being overly dramatic when she said it. She found out that her mother had tried to have her aborted, and a doctor friend of theirs warned them against it. So the mother tried everything she could to induce a miscarriage. This is somebody who didn't have the protection within herself or in the people who were supposed to be taking care of her to withstand the concrete mixer that Hollywood could be.
When my mother started The Wizard of Oz, she was 15 when she started it, and she finished it when she was 16. Your body starts to change. The character of Dorothy, of course, was even younger in the book. And they wanted my mom to look like a child. They said, you can't gain any weight. She had no idea that the studio had asked some of the doctors who worked at the studio to give her what they called energy pills and or pep pills so that she would keep that childlike figure.
Now, like I said, Judy Garland signed on to MGM, right? It was like an exclusive, what do they call it, like a 360 deal that artists have nowadays. She signed with MGM, run by a guy named, what's his first name? Is it John Mayer? No, not John Mayer. Different alleged predator. What the hell's his name? His last name was Mayer, right? That's where MGM comes from. Anyway, Mayer was known for being pretty handsy, apparently. And Refinery29 says this. They say, Garland was harassed by some of Hollywood's most powerful men. According to Gerald Clark, Garland's biographer, she was frequently approached for sex as a teenager. Meyer, who's been compared to Harvey Weinstein, is said to have groped Garland in his office. While she was singing, he placed her hand on her breast. Meyer also called her the little hunchback for her height. According to her third husband's biography, the actors who played Oz Munchkins also sexually harassed her. Quote, they would make Judy's life miserable on set by putting their hands under her dress. Recall Cindy Luft in her memoir, Judy and I, My Life with Judy Garland. So none of this is surprising to me. And if you go to Kenneth Anger's book from 1975 called Hollywood Babylon, which was a very scandalous book back in the day, revealing a lot of these improprieties in Hollywood. They have a brief section talking about Judy Garland. It says in there that she tried to commit... No, she did. They claim that... Kenneth Anger claimed that she did commit suicide. You'll see conflicting theories online about this. Anger says she did commit suicide in a locked London bathroom. Now, if you're probably like me, you're thinking, Isaac, was it in the bathtub? Illuminate confirm. We see that all the time. Celebrities dying in the bathtub. Aaron Carter, the most recent one. No, she died on the toilet is what he says. And he says that, of course, she was owned by MGM and Mayer, and they called her Amphetamine Annie because she was known for taking all these pills, these energy pills. And if you look at pictures of her, she looked pretty rough. She wasn't that old when she died, but she looked pretty old. But apparently she attempted suicide many times, pills, cutting her wrist, etc. And Anger says that she was fully dressed, crouched over the toilet, overdosed on barbiturates. And this was in June 1969, mind you, just 2 months before the infamous Manson family Tate murders. Very strange time in human history. Anger calls her the oldest ever because of her emotional toll. Quote, dramas galore for a dozen lifetimes. And the story here is that Hollywood and these studios, they would, because they owned the actors, they would put the actors on meth to keep them awake, keep up with all the appearances, the studio requests, the filming. Then they would put them on barbiturates to go to sleep, which I would argue isn't very different from what people are experiencing to this day. To this day. He's right, though, because if you look at the photos, you find out she was only 47 when she died. And it's like, man, she looked rough for only being in her 40s. She was 17 when they released Wizard of Oz. And what's sad is that she felt like she was ugly. And Hollywood was quick to support this thought in her head. She was, and you know, she was competing with a bunch of old school hotties back then. But obviously she was not ugly or out of shape, but she thought that, and Hollywood was like, yep, you're right, you should take more meth. And she put on, even though she was, again, she wasn't even fat, they put her on this crazy diet. Wikipedia says that they would give her a bowl of soup and lettuce, even if she would order a regular meal. Comparison is the thief of joy, they say. And Refinery29 says that she was on a diet of chicken soup, black coffee, 80 cigarettes. 80 cigarettes? Man, I don't know how you'd function with 80 cigarettes a day. What is that, like four packs? Diet pills and amphetamines. And even with all that happening, they still corseted her waist. I mean, I don't know, man. That's wild. Because when you watch the movie, you're not going to be like, oh, yeah, she could lose a few pounds. Like, what the hell, man? What's wrong with these folks? And it's like, you know, if you want to get into pop culture wars, a lot of people are upset because they're like, why you know, why are they trying to tell us that overweight women are sexy? You know, why would Victoria's Secret need to put thick girls on the in the catalogs now? This is culture woke wars, right? Well, this is the other side of the argument. This is what happens on some level when you've got free market capitalism mixed in with judging a woman's appearance. And sure, right? Like Lizzo's not my speed. But do you want this? You want our entertainers subjected to this kind of abuse? You want your daughter, your wife, to feel less than? Because that's what all of these corporations understand. That's what this whole capitalist system does. They make money by making you feel insecure. They show you these people that look amazing, but they're all photoshopped or on amphetamines or whatever. And you say, oh my God, I look hideous. I got to go buy the thing. I got to go buy the product. Like that's how it's, you want to talk about ritual magic. It's the magic of stealing your energy, knocking you down, and then you give them your money. Your hard work goes to making yourself feel better with their product, which doesn't even work. You know? And look, I'm not saying like, oh, we should definitely force every company to, you know, put a diverse panel of all shapes and sizes, but I'm okay with it, right? I don't think there's any harm in trying to reduce the fat shaming stuff. I mean, come on, fellas, don't be scared to put down on some thick, right? I don't know why they feel like this is a threat, right? This is what bugs me about commentators on, what do you call it, content creators and stuff that are complaining about this stuff. My whole thing is, being a truther on some level, a truther looks at this current system and says, you know what, I don't like this system. We need to change it. Right? I don't think it's fair what corporate America does to try to tell our women they don't look good enough and they need to do this, that, or the other to look good. So if we all agree that, hey, there's something wrong with our current system, then what's the answer? You have to make some changes. So some changes are made, and then no one's happy with the changes. No, I want to see nothing. My eyeballs can't handle seeing nothing but a size zero chick that's anorexic. Like, that's all we want to see. Like, come on, dude. Anyway, sorry, I keep getting on my soapbox. We're sticking to Wizard of Oz. Come on, let's go. Back to Wizard of Oz. So anyhow, Judy Garland. She's going through all this kinds of abuse, and she says, listen to this. If this doesn't make your heart hurt a little bit, I don't know what to tell you. She said, I wanted to black out the future as well as the past. I wanted to hurt myself and everyone who had hurt me. Now, that sounds very much like some mass shooter talk, you know? Anyway, with all that being said, Wikipedia tells us it wasn't a suicide, which I don't know if I believe that. They labeled it an accidental death, and the defense is that, well, there was lots of unopened pill bottles around. I don't know if I believe that. So, Judy Garland. We're almost done with Judy Garland. We're going to move on, because we got a lot about L. Frank Baum to talk about. But Judy, she was friends with JFK and Jackie, fun fact. And she would call, it says that she would call JFK weekly. I don't know, you know what, I got friends and I love them dearly. I don't know if I want to talk to him every week, but hey, more power to you. So apparently she would call him weekly and end her phone calls by singing the beginning of Over the Rainbow. That's from Me and My Shadow, a family memoir, a book about Garland. What a weird situation going on there. Anyway, all of this said, all of this connections, all of this awards and big films and 8 studio albums, and she dies in 1969 in debt with an estate worth $40,000. Now, in today's money, that's worth $220,000 for comparison purposes. And if you want to try to gauge what that means, Coolio died a few months ago. We did a show about that, if you recall, about the conspiracy theories of Coolio. He also was trying to expose the child abuse in the system, by the way. Coolio died with an estate worth $300,000 in today's money. So you're telling me Judy Garland, the main star of Wizard of Oz, the main star of A Star is Born, 8 studio albums, died with less assets and wealth than Coolio? That don't make no sense. Now, if you look into the defenses, they claim that it was mismanagement of her financial affairs by her representatives. And her daughter, Liza Minnelli, had to work to pay off her own mother's debt. Can you believe this? What a tragedy that story is. That's not the only tragedy in Wizard of Oz. Let's talk about the Tin Man, Jack Haley, the original Tin Man. Jack Haley, before he was replaced by Buddy Ebsen, he was covered in cancerous aluminum powder, couldn't breathe, and then they put him out of commission, and they were like, okay, let's get a different actor in here. Buddy Ebsen, you're in here. You're the Tin Man now. So they're like, okay, we're not going to do that aluminum powder anymore. We're going to do paste. And they put the paste on his face, and it gave him an eye infection, and he had to get surgery. Oh, my God. The poor Tin Man. Take a listen to another clip from Cursed Films 2.
The makeup was pretty basic. They used clown white, and then they dusted it with ground-up aluminum. He found that he was starting to have cramps in his fingers or in his feet. And then one night it spread to his arms and his legs, and he could not breathe.
They were putting silver paint on him, and they didn't realize that, you know, he was being poisoned.
He had been inhaling the aluminum particles, you know, that floated around. They had coated his lungs.
He went home one night, couldn't breathe, ended up in the hospital with pneumonia in an oxygen tent.
Unfortunately, his participation in the film was cut short. And it ended up being a film that kind of scarred him in a way, too. Literally scarred his lungs because he had a tendency toward bronchitis for the rest of his life.
Now, fun fact, there's an image, and I saw this on Dark Journalist. I'm not going to take credit for this, but there's an old-timey image of the Tin Man. And if you invert the image, it's exactly identical to the positioning of the Hanged Man from the tarot card deck. Why is that relevant? Well, the Hanged Man represents sacrifice, the ultimate sacrifice for the greater good. And in a way, Jack Haley, the guy who got screwed up and basically had long problems the rest of his life, was considered the ultimate sacrifice, in a way. Very Faustinian bargain-esque. I'll try to find a clean image and put it on the I'll put it on the video here, and then I'll put it on my Instagram. Yeah, and the quick plug, right? So I'm making videos, and I get them on my Rockfin, right? So if you subscribe on Rockfin, you can check out the video version. But I'm also rebuilding my YouTube. I'm gonna try it one more time. Why not? 10th time's the charm. At Occult Symbolism, go subscribe, go like and subscribe. And the catch is going to be, because I have this responsibility to my supporters, the catch is I put the videos that I make about a week after I release them on Rockfin and all my podcast supporter feeds and all that, so that they get first stab at it. Gotta help my supporters out the way they help me out. But you go subscribe to my new YouTube channel, At Occult Symbolism. My old one, which is At Isaac Weisheit, is now my backup, all right? I'm up to 16,000 subs over there. That's now the backup. And you can see when you go there, you'll find the video or me explaining it. But the link is always in the show notes. Go to youtube.com/@occultsymbolism. Like and subscribe, because we're going for it this year, baby. Okay, talk about the Hangman. Oh, yeah, and then fun fact. Lots of fun facts. Jack Haley's son, Jack Haley Jr., would go on to marry Judy Garland's daughter, Liza Minnelli. Love is found in tragedy. Another fun fact, and we're getting ready to talk L. Frank Baum here in a sec, but L. Frank Baum loves SoCal, as I do, and lots of differing opinions about SoCal. I love it. But he would spend his winters in San Diego at Coronado, and it's claimed that the Hotel Del Coronado, a very famous hotel, if you look it up, I haven't stayed there, but I've been there. It's beautiful. The Hotel Del Coronado is where L. Frank Baum was inspired to write Wizard of Oz, and particularly the Emerald City. And he wrote a poem about it, all this stuff. And the Grand Crown Room chandeliers were designed by Frank Baum himself. Fun fact. He wrote three of the, because look, he wrote like 14 Oz books. He wrote three of them at this home he had in Coronado, which apparently is a museum now that you can visit. I actually didn't know that. I was in San Diego, I don't know, 5 years ago or something. I wish I would have known that. I was in Coronado. I actually went out. I was looking at the where the Navy SEALs train and stuff. It looked pretty cool. And, oh, yeah, and the Navy SEALs are based out of Coronado, right? And if you look at the bird's eye view of their headquarters, it's a swastika. Hey, you know? But who cares, right? What's so fun about this fact, Isaac? Well, it turns out Jack Haley was in a film in 1935 called Coronado. Weird, huh? A synchronicity, if you will. Just like Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon album, there's something going on there. There's something to this story that's resonating and keeping the film engaging to new audiences 100 years later. What is it? Briefly, let's cover the other two. They don't have as interesting of a story. Ray Bolger as the Scarecrow. It was he was originally supposed to be the Tin Man. He was going to get the Iron Lung or whatever, but then you know, he would have got wrecked by the aluminum. A conspiracy. Where was Ray Bolger? Was he in the makeup room putting the cancer powder on the Tin Man's face himself? I don't know. Then the Lion, the Cowardly Lion, played by Burt Lair. Apparently this dude was emo AF. I'm going to read you from, I think this was from Wikipedia. Lair's son John has written, "While we were growing up, there was not one Oz image or memento of any kind in the apartment." He also described his father as living in habitual solitude and plagued by morbid worry, moroseness, and the thick fog of some ontological anxiety which seemed to have settled permanently around him and was palpable, impenetrable. Damn, the darkness got him. That's why you got to go to BetterHelp. Shout out BetterHelp, my sponsor. That's why you got to get on that BetterHelp. You got to work that depression out. Fellas, come on. All right, finally, L. Frank Baum, we made it. This is the big topic. He's the author of Wizard of Oz. Born in 1856, died in 1919, right when Crowley made contact with Lamb, the first gray alien. He wrote 14 novels in the Oz series. The first one, which this movie is based upon, was actually published in 1900. He wrote 14 novels. Then he dies, and there's another 21 novels written by Ruth Thompson after Baum died. I'd love to read all these things. I actually enjoy the story very much. As a kid, I remember reading Return to Oz. I don't remember the story. I don't think I've ever seen the movie. Maybe that'll be worth taking a look at. I'm sure it's Illuminate confirmed. I'm sure these books are Illuminate confirmed. I'm sure if you get down into it, it's full of transhumanism and Satanism and all kinds of stuff. But obviously, L. Frank Baum didn't catch his movie making it on the big screen. Kind of a shame. Now, there was a character in his third book. The third book's called Ozma of Oz, and this character's name is TikTok, considered the first robot in all of literature. Some could claim Tin Man's actually the first robot, but not really. Apparently, this TikTok character is. And apparently, Baum predicted a lot of technology in these Oz books, augmented reality, laptops, cell phones, So even before Kubrick in 2001, A Space Odyssey, or I guess you could say, oh my God, the name escapes me, the guy who wrote 2001 from Arthur C. Clarke. There we go. Whew. Would have lost some stripes as a conspiracy theorist to not recall the name of Arthur C. Clarke if I hadn't. Anyway, L. Frank Baum, he was a Methodist, then an Episcopalian, then he joins the Theosophical Society with his wife after her mother invited them to join. Okay? Now, this is where things get interesting, because L. Frank Baum was married to a woman named Maud Gage. Maud Gage's mother was a very famous women's rights activist. She was known for supporting women's suffrage, Native American rights, ending slavery. She grew up in a house that was a station on the Underground Railroad. She was into freedom of religion, all that stuff. Okay? Woke levels on fleek. Maud Gage's mom. And I guess she's the one who, there's a term called Matilda effect. I hadn't heard this before. And that's what the term comes from. It comes from Maud Gage's mother. And it's the tendency to deny women credit for scientific inventions. She wrote a book called Woman, Church, and State, talking about how the church is responsible for the oppression of women, which is a sentiment you will hear often. You know, the church is a very patriarchal sort of stance, very traditional stance. Some churches, they point to certain verses in the Bible to claim this, that, and the other. I don't know what to tell you about that. But this book that she wrote, and look, I'm not saying that they're wrong. I know, I always got to clarify. I don't want to get on the soapbox, though. You know, there's arguments for both sides of that talking point, that churches are patriarchal against women, that kind of stuff. There's good arguments for both sides, is all I'm going to say. And it's not my forte. I don't want to get into it. But anyways, this book would be banned through the thing called Comstock Laws. Now, to me, I didn't know what that meant. That sounded like something from Bioshock Infinity. I looked it up. Listen to this. Maybe you're smarter than me. Maybe you already know. But the U.S. Congress, and look, I'm just a public school education kid, okay? Don't, when I went to college, Penn State didn't teach me this. Okay, when the U.S. Congress, they criminalized using the U.S. Postal Service to send anything obscene or even contraceptives and sex toys. And these Comstock laws were all religiously motivated. Because if you recall, the Christian church, they were very much against contraception. A lot of younger people don't know that. I remember this growing up kind of being a talking point. The Christian church was opposed to contraception, and it was until like the mid-1900s that they changed stance on that, which is not that long ago. But anyways, the Comstock laws, there were a bunch of other laws further restricting similar things. And here is where you find the seeds to Baum's rebellion to Christianity. All right. Some could say they're Luciferian inspired. And that's the whole thing, man. That's why when I advocate for not going black pill, life's too short to go black pill, right? But one of the problems is, even if you watch all this stuff and you say, oh my God, Illuminati confirmed Lucifer is in the movies, we should just ban movies, that's not the answer. Because you're just going to piss people off. People want to see the Marvel movies. They want to see the Marvel movies. So, okay, you say, hey, my Christian Bible says we shouldn't, this is Illuminati confirmed, we shouldn't watch this, so we're going to ban it. Well, you're going to piss off all the people that may or maybe would find a path to Christ. So instead, what you do is you say, look, here's the Marvel movie. Here's why it's Illuminati confirmed. Just know that. Enjoy your movie. Have a great time. Try not to become a Luciferian. But I have a different Christian stance than most people. Most people are very much like, no, you got to convert your brothers and your sisters. And I'm like, man, everyone's got to, I have a hard enough time believing it myself. But you get into Comstock laws and legislating this stuff, and it's very quickly it's Handmaid's Tale. And then it's then also on top of that, it's like, which Christian God do you believe in? Because they all have different interpretations, it seems like, right? Anyway, this is why L. Frank Baum went Illuminate Confirm. Okay? Because these Comstock laws, I argue. And then there's a blog that I started digging into, vovacia.wordpress, and it's got some very interesting articles. I reached out to this anonymous person and they never wrote me back. Boo-hoo. Because I think they've got some interesting points they should make on here, on this thing. But anyway, this article from 2016, Baum versus the Bible. All right, listen to this. Although raised Methodist, Baum was known to have some issues with Christianity. He was influenced by his mother-in-law, just like I was telling you, who saw the church as a major contributor to the oppression of women. Baum and his wife joined the Theosophical Society, an organization that had some universalist tendencies, in saying that there's some truth to all religions. Which, by the way, that's what Father Seraphim Rose warns us about. That's ecumenicalism stuff. But you can seek truth without actually following a specific faith. Theosophy also contains some occult elements, and we see hints of those in Baum's book. I've often seen a quote from an 1890 editorial in the Aberdeen Saturday Pioneer, quote, "The absurd and legendary devil is the enigma of the church." I don't know the context or exactly what it means, whether he objectified to, say, fire and brimstone sermons, or to a being who personified evil. When Baum was a member of the California men's club called the Uplifters, he wrote a play called The Uplift of Lucifer. While the entire text apparently survives, all I could find of it online was this excerpt from the end, in which a fictional member of the club convinces the devil to give up his job, as there is already enough evil on earth without hell being in play. Certainly, the idea that humanity creates evil itself instead of it being the product of supernatural forces is one that has some religious and philosophical support. And in The Witchcraft of Mary Marie, the title character's teacher outright dismisses the idea that witches sell their souls to Satan. While such references show up from time to time in Baum's fantasies, they generally don't make it into Oz itself. So, Baum ties to Luciferianism due to oppression through his an inspiration through his wife's mother's theories on religion. But let's talk about this Theosophical Society, right? And this is something that's very interesting. When you dig around looking for L. Frank Baum biographies and videos, there's countless of them out there. There's one I haven't seen yet on PBS called The American Oz or something like that. I wanted to watch it. I had to just call it quits at some point because I was like, good Lord, this is getting to be the biggest analysis. I'm going to be the expert by the time it's all said and done, and I want to be the expert. But you almost never see a reference to this religion of his, well, not religion, this philosophy, theosophy that he was a subscriber to. They never mention it. What is theosophy? Well, a lady named Helena Blavatsky dreamt up this fantasy and wrote a bunch of books. It's this fusion of occult research with comparative religious studies. Meaning she tried to synthesize multiple religions and said, hey, there's a little bit of truth in each one of these, okay? So we should just make one universal religion, one universal truth we can all subscribe to, a.k.a. the secret doctrine. That's what she called it, the secret doctrine. And Crowley did something similar, right? Pythagoras did something similar, right? They would travel around and take different ideas, here'sies, there'sies, and make one ultimate truth. Excuse me. Wikipedia says it's a religion. Followers argue it is not a religion, it's a truth. And this is very much, if you read, I interviewed Dina Pasalka in 2020, one of the greatest interviews I ever did. I think it's very important. She wrote a book about her time with this secret society of UFO people. They call it the Invisible College. And they said the same thing. They said, this is not a belief system because this is real. We have artifacts from UFOs. This is real. This is the truth. It's not a belief. Very interesting, right? And if when you get into all this, and that's why I wrote the alien books, it's connected. The occult belief systems and alien life forms, it's all the same thing. But theosophy, it uses different philosophies, Neoplatonism, Buddhism, Hinduism. It's described as Western esotericism with an Eastern flavor. And Blavatsky claimed that there was this ancient brotherhood of integrated ascended masters, much like you'd seen Star Wars, right? I wrote that book, The Star Wars Conspiracy. We talked about this. This brotherhood of integrated ascended masters around the world, centrally from Tibet, which, by the way, I'm watching Twin Peaks, apparently a role to be played in Tibet. I haven't finished it yet. Analysis pending, right? But the integrated ascended masters, a.k.a. the Mahatmas, they learned these ideas of Blavatsky's theosophy to become enlightened. And Blavatsky was like, oh, okay, perfect. Let me share it with the world.
Okay.
They're like, hey, this is how you break free from this endless cycle of reincarnation and suffering. They learned that the ancient religion from Atlantis was suppressed to keep people locked into this planet. And they list some of their ascended masters they believe in were Abraham, Moses, Solomon, even Jesus. And the masters, they look over humanity, they try to guide us, and they call them the Great White Brotherhood or the White Lodge, which ties us into Twin Peaks. Like I said, I'm only halfway through season two. I don't know where that goes. I just know they've mentioned it a couple times, the White Lodge and the Blue Lodge. Well, the White Lodge are the ascended masters of theosophy, the Great White Brotherhood. And Blavatsky, she talks about how every human has this divine spark within them. And this divine spark is a piece of the perfected God within each one of us, right? Man is made in the likeness of God. You see a lot of sort of parallels to Christian belief, but not quite the same. So it's just tangible enough. But they say each of us has a piece of God within us, and if you perfect and work on this perfected piece, you can become an ascended master, and you no longer have to reincarnate and suffer. And this is all Gnostic thought. This is subscribing to this idea that we live in a simulation planet, in a fake reality run by an evil god, the Yaldabaoth, the Demiurge. But the purpose of life, according to theosophy, is spiritual emancipation of the soul, right? Each of us has an ego or the monad, and we all come from this solar deity, and the purpose is to bypass the false god, to perfect oneself, bypass this false god, and make it to the real god, which is where your divine spark comes from, out in the pleroma, they call it. And your body, it has several components. And the divine spark is the one you got to focus on to make union with the highest self or highest version of oneself to merge back into the one God and avoid reincarnation into the false world. And I'm oversimplifying. You can read her books, Isis Unveiled, The Secret Doctrine. It's about 10 million pages of, to me, nonsense. I'm like, whoa. I mean, I don't understand what she's saying. It's very confusing. But she's very, well, things you can take away, she's very much interested in Zoroastrianism, and theosophy is directly related to it. Hence the name of Oz. That comes from the Zoroastrianism religion. Because Oz's real name, his full name, if you look it up, is Oscar Zoroaster. There's your Oz. And look, I'm Illuminate confirmed too, because the full name is Oscar Zoroaster Phadrig Isaac Norman Henkel Emmanuel Ambroise Diggs. Now, some people, and I've seen a documentary, I watched several documentaries about Wizard of Oz. This one was on, it was PBS, but it wasn't the one about Frank Baum. It was a different one. Some say that the name Oz was inspired from file cabinet folders because it would be divided up A through N and then O through Z. And L. Frank Baum saw the O through Z and was like, oh, Oz. People claim that's not true. Aleister Crowley wrote a book called Liber Oz. Of course, this was after the death of L. Frank Baum. So, of course, this was not the inspiration for Wizard of Oz. But Liber Oz, which means book 77, it's actually not a book. It's a single page. And it describes the goals for mankind. And Crowley is very similar to Blavatsky, very similar thought here. And look, if you're one of these occult nerds or a Wizard of Oz nerd, I apologize if I'm getting things off just a flavor or two, all right? But in general, most this all checks out in general. But if you want to get down in the weeds with Liber Oz and what Crowley believed versus Blavatsky, I'm sure there's a million things that you could be like, well, you know, he didn't believe in the ascended masters. He believed in the ascended non-masters or whatever, right? There's nerds on sub. I'm just one guy, all right? I only got so much time. Don't even at me. Everyone's an expert, all right? Liber Oz. Why am I getting so mad about that? I don't know. People are just trying to help me out, all right? Sorry, I take that back. You want to at me, at me. Just know I'm a sensitive guy, all right? You're just trying to help me out. You're a friend. You're listening to the show. I love you. I'm very sorry. You know, that's my ego. I need a little suppression of the ego because the ego says, I don't like it when I'm wrong. You know, I'm going to work on that with my therapist. I'm going to go to betterhelp.com. Where's my pen? Anyway. Okay. Okay. Let's talk about this Liber 77, Liber Oz. If you go to Crowley's Magic Liber ABA book 4, it says this. It says that this paper published in 41, Crowley describes it as the OTO plan in words in one syllable. They are the rights of man. It's an historical document. The items don't go easily on the tree of life, but I've got them down to 5 sections: moral, bodily, mental, sexual freedom, and the safeguard tyrannicide. 160 words in all. All right. So the OTO plan, what's he talking about? He's talking about the magical order, the Ordo Templi Orientis, right? The order of the Templars. Are they the Knights Templar? No, but it's the same name. Very strange, right? These are all very similar. They're all inspired, when you boil it down to me, by Luciferian inspirations, all right? I'm going to read to you from Liber Oz. It's not that long. I could read you the whole page, but I won't. This is where you get, it says, the law of the strong, this is our law and the joy of the world. This is social Darwinianism. This is Church of Satan. This is hyper free market capitalism. It's the law of the strong. Only the strongest survive. Right? If you're weak, you just die and move on. This is what I was arguing about when we first started debating the philosophies of COVID. Right? There was people saying, okay, so what? Old people are going to die. They're going to die anyway. And that, there's a philosophical question to be had there. It's like, to what length do we go to? Right? Sure, I get it. Old people are going to die. If they don't die from this year, they're going to die from the flu next year. I get it. But there's a philosophical question to be had. It's like, how far do we go, right? Do we do our best and say, look, old people, you just stay home and limit their freedoms? Do we say, okay, everyone wears a mask and maybe that'll help them out, maybe, and maybe grandma won't die? Do we all stay locked in our homes to save some people a few years? I don't know. And look, I don't know the answer. I'm just saying there's a philosophical question to be had there. It's not as simple. But Crowley would have said, no, the strongest survive. We go out there, and if you die from it, you die. You were weak. It's probably what they did back in the Black Plague days, didn't they? We also get "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law," which is the famous saying from Crowley for Thelema, as seen on Jay-Z's hoodie. You already know the whole drill. We get the passage, "Every man and every woman is a star. There is no God but man." Again, the idea that man can become God. Major thought in occult philosophies, theosophy, all that stuff. Oh, and here's the best one. "Man has the right to kill those who would thwart these rights. The slaves shall serve." Again, social Darwinianism, Church of Satanisms, where it's like, look, if you mess it with me, I get to choose violence for you. Some people like this idea. Some people like that Wild West idea of, you know, it's like, hey, I've read a philosophy once that was talking about, well, the way to stop gun violence is for every single person to have a gun, because then you would watch the way you talk to somebody. It's an interesting thought experiment. "But man has the right to kill those who would thwart these rights." Now, that begs for some violent insurrection. And then it says, "The slave shall serve." So might is right. And if you go along with that logic, because people would say, well, then we can all be armed and, you know, when the government takes away my right, I could storm the Capitol and shoot people or whatever. Well, you have to understand the pecking order, right? You could go that route. The pecking order, though, is you've got the U.S. military with tons of drones and bombs and weapons you don't even know exist. I mean, this goes into gun right laws, but, you know, I support Second Amendment. Because look, you know, we all need the right to have some kind of presence. But when you get down into it, the U.S. military is like one of the highest order killing machines. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to stand a chance. Even if you got an assault weapon and you're perched up on your roof, you know, it just takes one drone operator, boom, JDAM bomb, bam, history. So that's the idea. The slave shall serve. Might is right. And we can't support that because in the pecking order of schemes, we are the little people. You don't want the bigger guy on the block to be able to kick your door in and take your food and your wife and stuff, right? We have to respect one another. We get democratic freedom, and Crowley wouldn't want that, which this is a very, I don't know, this is a very dangerous philosophy because Crowley was an elitist. He was born into money. He would very much support this idea of Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos telling us what to do. Because it's like, hey, you know what? They got all the money. You don't like it? Suck it. The slaves are here to serve. Now, you know, and we didn't talk Zoroastrianism. Let's talk that for a second. Because we talked about how the name of Oz is Oscar Zoroaster. And this is one of the basis of Blavatsky's thoughts for theosophy. The founder was a guy named Zarathustra or Zoroaster. He was a Persian prophet. This is one of the oldest religions on earth. Their god is Ahura Mazda, the sun god or the lord of wisdom. They believed in free will, heaven, and hell. Right? A lot of people say, oh, Christianity is just basically a ripoff of Zoroastrianism. You'll hear that sometimes. I think that was maybe even in the Zeitgeist movies, was it not? But the claim is that Zoroastrianism influenced the major three Abrahamic religions, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. And they also influenced Gnosticism and Buddhism, right? And what's interesting is that Friedrich Nietzsche, the famous philosopher, wrote a fictional book called Thus Spoke Zarathustra, all right? And this influenced a guy named Richard Strauss to compose a piece called Thus Spoke Zarathustra. And this musical piece was famously in 2001, A Space Odyssey. And that's a whole rabbit hole, right? The Stanley Kubrick rabbit hole. But Blavatsky described theosophy as being derived from Zoroaster philosophies. She said, and I quote, from The Key to Theosophy, she said, "To form the nucleus of a universal brotherhood of humanity without distinction of race, color, or creed." Sounds nice, right? To promote the study of Arian and other scriptures of the world's religions and sciences, and to vindicate the importance of old Asiatic literature, namely of the Brahmanical, Buddhist, and Zoroastrian philosophies, to investigate the hidden mysteries of nature under every aspect possible, the psychic and spiritual powers latent in man especially. These are, broadly stated, the three chief objectives of the Theosophical Society. Now, spiritual powers latent in man. This is where you get all of your superhero movies, Marvel, DC. This all comes from Theosophy. Theosophy is also where we got baseball from, by the way. But what was I talking about? So I did a show. I was supposed to put a lecture on at Comic-Con. Ended up not being able to do it. I posted the lecture on the audio feed. I don't even know. When was that? 2021, 2020. I couldn't tell you. 2021, I think. You can check it out, about the occult and superheroes. We go deep into that kind of talk. So if you go to, and we're almost done here, folks. Hang in there with me. I know we're getting too deep. Ulrich Romner wrote a book I have called The Blavatsky Effect. It's very interesting. And it says this: when ignorant of the true meaning of the esoteric divine symbols of nature, man is apt to miscalculate the powers of his soul, and instead of communing spiritually and mentally with the higher celestial beings, the good spirits, the gods of the theurgists of the Platonic school, he will unconsciously call forth the evil dark powers which lurk around humanity, the undying grim creations of human crimes and vices, and thus fall from theurgia, white magic, into goetia, black magic. According to Blavatsky, she said, quote, "No one can be a true occultist without being a real theosophist. Otherwise, he is simply a black magician, whether conscious or unconscious." She even thought that mesmerism and hypnotism were occult arts. So, was L. Frank Baum an occultist? Absolutely. You see it right here. You can't be a true occultist without being a theosophist. And in their defense, they say, look, we're doing white magic. We're not talking about the dark forces, the black magic of man trying to make himself better. Whereas Crowley would kind of dabble in whatever. I think he was more of a black magician. But what's so bad about all this, right? Well, it depends, right? It's kind of like all religious thought. Hitler thought he was visited by an ascended master, one of these theosophical ascended masters. He identified him as Lucifer, by the way. And from this, he was led to Blavatsky's Secret Doctrine book, which glorifies Lucifer. But again, they say, no, that's not a bad guy. It's the good guy. He's the misunderstood hero. That's just Christian fake news. And if you're like me and you're like, whoa, wait a minute, rewind. What? You're saying Hitler said a integrated ascended master named Lucifer visited him? Because that's a bold claim. And if you go, I got this from the Blavatsky Effect. They source it to a book called Secrets of the Rainbow, page 101. I couldn't find the book. So take that one with a grain of salt. That's what they said, though. I wouldn't be shocked. Wouldn't be shocked. So we dig into the inspiration of Oz, and we see all these connections to the occult and ascended masters from some other dimension, maybe even Lucifer, who knows, right? Well, that's all speculation, conspiracy theory. Until you find a quote from L. Frank Baum himself about how this story came from another realm. I read this on timesofisrael.com, and you'll hear it in several podcasts and stuff. Having created Oz immediately after his conversion to theosophy, he was not shy about the role divine inspiration played in crafting the story. Quote, "I think that sometimes the great author had a message to get across, and he has to use the instrument at hand. I happen to be that medium. And I believe the magic key was given to me to open the doors to sympathy and understanding joy, peace, and happiness." So he's saying he's channeling this, you know, higher power, the great author. And, you know, and finally, in conclusion here, Baum, interesting final words he had spoken to his wife. He says, now we can cross the shifting sands. And the shifting sands is a reference when you read the Oz book to the desert outside of the land of Oz, of the Emerald City. And we'll talk about that in part two. We'll talk about the desert and the Emerald City and all that. But one final thought, and we're going to wrap up part one here. And then part two, we're going to get into the movie. Part three, we're going to go to in conclusion, and we're going to wrap up all the occult ideas that we saw in the movie. All right, I'm going to walk you through the whole thing. We have to know that Wizard of Oz is much like Alice in Wonderland. This is a conditioning film. It's conditioning the minds of the viewers, particularly children, right? You want to talk about grooming? Like, in a way, maybe it's grooming. Now, I watched Alice in Wonderland growing up, and I was absolutely fascinated by it. And you see me, I turned out fine. So my thing is, look, I'm not a cancel culture guy. I think it's up to the parents to understand these concepts and relay them to their kids. Like, hey, you know, if your kid's watching Wizard of Oz and they're like, hey, you know what? I think I want to worship Lucifer. You can say, sit down. Let me talk to you for a minute here. But your kids are probably just going to be like, oh, wow, scary monkeys and look at the witch and look at the Oz, you know. That's probably as far as it's going to go. But it is, in fact, conditioning into the subconscious. All right, let's make no qualms about that. Entertainment is influential. And David Lynch himself, the famous director, the guy who did Twin Peaks and all these crazy movies, he acknowledges this. In fact, there's a whole, ironically, I didn't know this until I was wrapping up this analysis. There's a whole documentary about Lynch's obsession with the film Wizard of Oz. I couldn't catch a copy anywhere. I don't even know where to stream the damn thing. Couldn't find it online. It was at a film festival at the end of 22. We'll see. John Waters, the famous director, actor, I think he's an actor. He said, talking about David Lynch, he says, David has gone over the rainbow from the first film ever. He lives in a different reality than you or I do, and that's quite obvious. Then the director of this documentary, something Philippe, says, it's really hard not to see the DNA of the Wizard of Oz all over his work, and I don't think it's all conscious. And if you have doubts, David Lynch himself says, there's not a day that goes by where I don't think about the Wizard of Oz. So there you go. That's part one. Like I said, you got to stay subscribed to the show. Part two, we're getting into the actual film. I'm going to walk through the whole film, the symbolism you see in it, rainbows, MK Ultra, Osiris worship, Illuminate confirm all day, all night. It's going to be a trip. But I did want to lay in the foundation of all the characters that are involved in the making of this film, the inspirations of Theosophy, because it's all there. It's all there. In black and white, and then in Technicolor. All right. So if you like the show, leave a review. Leave a 5-star review. Okay? We got to keep these 1-star haters at bay, because they're trying to shut down the real messaging here. So drop a 5-star if you like the show. Subscribe to it. All the things. Links always in the show notes. Until next time, stay woke. Yeah.